Welcome to today's Talkie Bet. Here, live at Justin's house. Somehow that feels like it should be just like a music thing or something, doesn't it? Is there already a live at Justin's house? No, that's somebody else's house. That's the guy from Hall & Oates, live at Daryl's house. That's what I'm thinking of. If you are listening online or you're listening to this later on the podcast and you sort of hear a dull roaring noise in the background, that is not the microphone and it is not the dogs. It is the wind. There's sort of a low frequency just everywhere today because it's super windy here in Winnipeg. And we hope that it's bringing us warmth. But not today. Not today. I want to acknowledge both the historic fact that when we gather here, we do so on Treaty 1. And I also want to reach beyond that to say that the more I learn about the ways in which colonization has attempted to wipe out the cultures and the stories and the first peoples of this continent, the more I carry a personal lament in my spirit about the width and depth both of the damage done to all of those things. And having said that, the more I listen to the voices that are speaking into the wider conversation of this place at this time, the more I feel like I hear thoughtful and hopeful voices of Indigenous knowledge keepers and keepers of the spirit, creatives, artists, academics, caregivers, everyday people. But I feel like I'm hearing more and more voices from the first peoples of this land, pointing ways forward that are both deeply committed to telling the truth about the past and present, and also not giving up on looking toward the making of a better future. I don't know if you were listening to the news at all, it was a hard soundbite to avoid or to miss, but David Chartrand this past week, the president of the Manitoba Métis Federation, speaking about that group's meeting with the Pope this past week, and the soundbite tended to be this one. We can't change history, we can't change the past, but we can change the future. And in some interviews, he added the word certainly to that sentence. We can certainly change the future. That commitment to a message of hope for the future, grounded in the reality of the truth about the past and the present, I think that's a space in which good things can happen. And it's not a space that's easy to come by. I don't think it's a simple space to sustain. But I do believe that one of the things that helps to keep that space alive and lively is story. And we all have stories we tell ourselves about how the world works. We can call them lots of different things. And we do call them lots of different things. We call them worldviews, narratives, meaning-making stories, mythologies, guiding stories, the truth. We call them lots of different things. Some of the time, some of us are conscious of what those stories are for us. A lot of the time, we're not. Life is busy, it's full of activities and decisions and taking care of stuff that needs to be done and making a living and all of that. We're not sitting and contemplating our stories. In a world of specialization, one of the things that can easily happen is that we hand things off to experts, we hand them off to specialists, and there's a real possibility that we often do this with our stories as well. We hand them off to the professional storytellers, the writers, the poets, the filmmakers, the songwriters, the artists, the story keepers, maybe the theologians, the philosophers, maybe even the preachers. And of course, the people who invest deeply in knowing the big stories and who give up significant portions of their lives to reflect on those stories and bring them to us in all sorts of creative and helpful ways, those people have a very important place in keeping stories alive and vibrant for all of us. Having said that, I would add that we do ourselves and the world a great disservice if we hand all of that over to the experts. The world is made the way that it is by the accruing of untold numbers of everyday choices and decisions. I find it easy to forget that, especially when I'm surrounded by things like the news, which relies on reducing that complexity to something called headlines in order to stay within the boundaries of their own formats and chosen ways of communicating and keep me clicking. It's easy to forget, or if you prefer, hard to remember, that the world is made up of us, of billions of humans that make choices about how we will live every moment of every day. And we, that us that makes the world, have stories that guide us, consciously or otherwise, in making all of those decisions, all the time. There's a famous dictum, almost always attributed to Socrates, that says, "An unexamined life is not worth living." The context, as it's traveled over time to us, holds a bit of interest in light of this talky bit in particular. We have the story of that quote being attributed to Socrates as it's told in Plato's Apology. And in that document, those words are spoken by Socrates at his trial, for impiety and the corrupting of youth, at one point in which he has to choose between exile and death. And he chooses death because exile would make his continued exploration of his great questions impossible, but his religious beliefs suggested that he could continue that endeavor even after death. Hence, death was the better choice because it allowed him to continue to examine life. That's a little different than what "an unexamined life is not worth living" sounds like at a quick pass, but that's the context. That's a pretty weighty choice in any context, though, and I'm intrigued by how his story about what will happen to him after death deeply informs his choice in that moment of duress. "I would rather die and continue to explore what I believe than live if living meant I could not do that," might be one way to paraphrase that. When the going gets tough, a powerful story can keep us going. Which brings us to a rather important aspect of guiding stories. Much of the power of guiding stories resides in the way that they handle the future. And one of the powerful ways stories can do that is by inviting us to reframe the past. Now, I think that bears a little further examination because at a quick glance, it can sound like permission for revisionist approaches to history, right? Like, we're going to look back at events that are generally regarded as having happened, and we're going to say they didn't. So this is the stuff of Holocaust denial and alternative facts, you know. And I suppose the idea of reframing the past has inherent in it some of those dangers. But that is not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is better captured by a wonderful phrase that I first heard from someone named Daniel Heath Justice. Justice is professor and Canada Research Chair in Indigenous Literature and Expressive Culture at the University of British Columbia. He is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation and a very thoughtful person when it comes to the power of stories, not only as an academic, but also as someone who is a writer of creative fiction. In much of his work, speaking about these ideas, he uses this powerful little phrase, "imagine otherwise." Imagine otherwise. And he uses it to both sum up and to open up this whole realm of examining stories. Justice says that when he's talking about stories, in that regard, he's not talking about texts. And that's a really important distinction coming from him because he's somebody whose most recent book is called Why Indigenous Literatures Matter. I mean, it's about texts in some ways. And I think it's an important distinction in our context at the table, where so many of us grew up in environments that centered religious texts, often in ways that were meant to deliberately judge and exclude other texts. So when Justice says, "imagine otherwise," he says, I'm talking about stories. I'm not just talking about texts. When it comes to the importance of stories, he says this, "I'm thinking of our traditional stories. I'm thinking of our family stories. The dreams and fantasies and imaginings of worlds that haven't yet come into being or may never come into being. I'm thinking of poems and songs and all of the ways that we articulate our being in the world, past, present, and future." And he is, of course, in that quote, and often when he refers to this realm, speaking most directly about Indigenous stories. However, the observations he makes about those stories has wisdom for all of us, and it can help us think about the stories that we tell ourselves every day, the ones that so deeply inform the choices we make, the ways we act and interact with one another and with the world that we're a part of. So, wisdom from the first peoples for all of us. In a recent episode, October 21, I believe, of a podcast called Don't Call Me Resilient, Heath Justice was one of the guests that talked about how stories about alternative worlds can help us imagine a better future. The cover graphic, if you look this up, is a slice from a particular graphic novel or comic, I guess it would have been in its era, that gets referred to in the interview. And that's kind of fascinating in itself. This is not in my notes, but one of the things that struck me about Justice's comments, I think it was in this particular podcast, I might have read it somewhere else, but he's talking about some of the epic fantasies that he was drawn to as a youngster. And one of them was, not surprisingly, was Lord of the Rings. And he makes the observation that in the Lord of the Rings, the hobbits are brown. And I realized it had never occurred to me. I missed that. I wasn't looking for someone like me in that novel. I sort of assumed maybe they all looked like me, but smaller, furry feet. If you watch the movies, it doesn't translate, right? But Justice grew up with an indigenous father and a white mother. And as a kid reading those novels, he was like, wait, the heroes in this story look like my dad. It's a very powerful experience for him. So that's alternative worlds, that idea. I want to read a chunk, actually, of the opening exchange between Vinita Svirasava, who is the host of Don't Call Me Resilient, this episode. So Svirasava starts the episode this way. I know we've all been stressed and anxious. Being in the middle of a global pandemic this past year has felt almost apocalyptic, reminding me of themes I've read about in dystopian novels. There are two Americas, one where people are taking to the streets, risking their lives to protest racism and police brutality, and the other where citizens are storming their own capital. Here in Canada, we continue to find unmarked graves of Indigenous schoolchildren. All this against the backdrop of a series of life-threatening and raging forest fires. How are we supposed to deal with all of this? How do we find the strength to get out of bed every day? How do we find the joy in these times? So that's the opening of the podcast. And Daniel Heath Justice replies this way. I think we need anything that will give us strength and hope, and that helps us see the world through a lens of wonder and not despair. A lot of people say, oh, the world is a trash fire. And, you know, there's that meme that goes along with the little dog drinking coffee at the table and everything's on fire and the little dog is saying, this is fine. I think about that image a lot. But I think for me, I don't see the world as a trash fire. I see the world as relatives who are under incredible strain and who are in a lot of danger. And I think thinking about the world as a trash fire does an injustice to our relatives as well as to ourselves. So I think thinking about other worlds and other possibilities aren't just about kind of fantasy possibilities, but actual other worlds that exist alongside us now. And that can hopefully help make what we're doing mean more and maybe make a difference in the lives of those around us and not just the human lives. And Virastravi responds and says, oh, are you talking about other worlds like parallel universes? Or are you talking about other worlds like other possibilities? Justice responds, I think both. I think part of it is we're imaginative and creative people, and it's not just about the world that we've inherited, and it's a really cruel and painful world that we've inherited, but there are so many other inheritances that we have, and that we have not only the right to hold on to, but the obligation to. And whether those worlds are worlds in a galaxy far away or otherwise histories of the past or potential futures, I think focusing only on the here and now often focuses on a very narrow, abusive here and now. But we are more than that. Lots of material out there from Justice and others who are thinking and writing and talking about these ideas and others like them. I'll leave that for anyone that's intrigued or drawn to explore. What I want to do today in our context is offer an idea and some questions to encourage us to examine our own stories to see if they hold up under the circumstances of our world, our times, our daily lives in ways that are helpful and good. Because we need stories that can do that, and we need them now. A little while ago, I was talking with an acquaintance whose senior high-age kid got sort of ambushed by a predatory relationship with an adult in their church community. And thankfully, in this instance, a very caring set of parents and other committed adults, including some professional support, stepped up to intervene. Church leadership didn't. And we were having a conversation about this one day, and I was so incensed by this person's description of the perspective and justifications offered by the leadership in this community for keeping that predatory person in a position of community leadership even after the facts about it came to light, that I sort of blurted out something that I believe, but that I try to be careful about offering in conversation because I know it can be a distressing idea for people. The story these leadership folks were leaning on to justify their choices drew heavily on themes like forgiveness and grace. Big, powerful, beautiful ideas. But not ideas meant to justify avoiding the taking of responsibility for individual choices and actions, nor to make protected havens for bad behavior, even if the person making those destructive choices can lead the worship band so effectively that the whole room is awash in emotions by the end of the set. This person told me the story, and part of what I said in response was, if the story you believe justifies hurting people, taking advantage of people, then maybe it's time to ask if you need to examine or adjust your story. I'm not defending my choice to say that in the moment. That's complex and contextual. I still don't know how I feel about having said it right then. But I can tell you that my conviction about the merit of the idea has held up for me. The stories that we tell ourselves, the stories that we bring into our lives, are what inform our imaginations about how we look at the world around us, past, present, and future. They help us consider how, in the words of Heath Justice, the past might have been otherwise, and how those possibilities can inform the way we act in the present and the dreams and hopes that we have for the future. There's lots we could explore in this vein, including why it's important that our big stories include things we might call fantastical, wondrous, things like, you know, talking animals or creatures we never expect to see in the material world, or dancing forests or singing oceans. We won't do any of that exploring today because I said I was going to offer some questions we could use to query our own stories. So that's what I'm going to leave us with today. Some kind of pragmatic ways to inquire into our own stories to see if they are worthy of informing our view of the past, present, and future, and to ask ourselves if maybe they need some adjusting. This list is not meant to be exhaustive. I would say it's probably not even thorough, but it is meant to get the wheels turning. So my hope would be, as with many of the things that we do in this context, that it would be catalytic. So here are some questions that I try to use when I'm thinking about the stories that inform my view of the world, that I hope can help us look at our stories with maybe a little more, I'm not using this in the literature department sense, but a little more critical lens, a little more inquisitive lens. Do the stories I tell myself about the world bring me strength and hope? Do or could those same stories offer communal hope and strength, or are they deeply individualistic? Do the stories I tell myself include elements of wonder? Do my stories have a history? And if so, how have those stories historically informed human choices and behaviors in the past? Are those past choices and behaviors consistent with my own values about what would make the world a better place for everyone? Do the stories I tell myself encourage and equip me to face the truth with honesty, courage, and hope? Do the stories I tell myself include others who are powerful, beautiful, and good, and not like me? Can I share the stories I tell myself in joyful, unabashed, and open ways with others without feeling like I'm judging them or insisting that my story needs to also be their story? Is my story open to being understood in more than one way? Or is it adaptable to changing circumstances? And finally, does my story or the stories I tell myself help me to imagine otherwise about both the past, present, and future? Again, not exhaustive, but perhaps the kinds of questions that if we bring them to bear on the stories we tell ourselves, the stories that shape the decisions we make, moment by moment, day by day, we might see some things that need a tweak. We might also see some things that are deeply affirming, that feel like, yes, that's a good story. We don't need perfect stories. Things move too fast for a perfect story, I think, to behave well over time anyway. We need stories that are lively, responsive stories. And some of us, I know, at least struggle with having been told that the story that should anchor our view of everything is rooted in a kind of immutability of the principal figures in the story that mean that it doesn't adapt well, that it would be unfaithful to adapt it. And that, I think, is a corner that is difficult to live well in, not least of all in an age where things are changing as rapidly as they are in this one. Anyway, worth considering. And if the bag is for you, you know, pick it up. And if it isn't, don't. But my hope would be for some good catalytic stuff to come out of questions like that. Going to leave it there for now. And hang out.